New Age spirituality. And you know, boys and girls, friends and neighbors, I could stand to do this all the live long day, but long about now, sort of an overwhelming force takes over and happens in my life sometimes, maybe happens in your life. That's right, it's time to head on down the old Catfish Highway, but thanks to everybody for listening in, and thanks to Elliot and Lacey for taking care of our telephonic communications. This is WORT Madison. It's the Muddacres Special, Bluegrass Special. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Bye-bye.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. Hamas has said it's ready to release the last living Israeli-American hostage it's known to be holding and hand over the remains of four other dual nationals captured during the 7th of October attacks. Idan Alexander was a serving Israeli soldier when he was taken. Yolande Nell is in Jerusalem.
As an Israeli soldier, under the terms of the original Gaza ceasefire agreement, it was expected that Idan Alexander would have been among the last hostages to be released. However, in an official statement, Hamas now says it's agreed to return the 21-year-old, who's also a US citizen, along with four bodies. It doesn't give details or make clear what it demands in return, but it's thought likely that the deal involves Israel releasing Palestinian prisoners and extending the fragile Gaza truce.
The former president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, has appeared by video link for his first hearing at the International Criminal Court, the first Asian former head of state to face charges there. The 79-year-old is accused of the crime against humanity of murder for his war against drugs, which killed between 7 and 30,000 people. Anna Holligan is in The Hague.
Around 100 of Rodrigo Duterte's supporters are outside the ICC following his initial appearance, during which the judges confirmed his identity, that he understood the charges against him, and set a date for the confirmation of charges hearing as the 23rd of September 2025. At that point, the prosecution, the defence and the victim's representatives will have an opportunity to give a flavour of their evidence, and then the judges will decide whether there is sufficient evidence to send this case to trial.
The Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani has said the leader of the Islamic State militant group has been killed. He said Abdullah Maki Musli al-Rifai, one of the most wanted men in the world, had been killed in an operation by the US-led coalition, in which Iraqi security forces had also been involved. Islamic State had imposed strict Islamist rule on millions of people in Syria and Iraq before they were ousted by US-led troops in 2019. Mark Carney has been sworn in as Prime Minister of Canada, along with his cabinet.
I will, in all things, to be treated, debated, and resolved in Privy Council, faithfully, honestly, and truly declare my mind and my opinion. I shall keep secret all matters committed and revealed to me in this capacity, or that shall be secretly treated of in Council.
Mr. Carney is a former head of both the Bank of Canada and the Bank of England. He replaces the previous leader of the governing Liberal Party, Justin Trudeau. Sources told the BBC that Mr. Carney's first trip abroad next week will be to France and Britain, and not, as is customary for a new Canadian Prime Minister, to the neighbouring United States. This is the latest world news from the BBC. President Zelensky has said Russia is trying to complicate talks on a ceasefire with Ukraine because it wants diplomacy to break down. President Putin said before meeting a US envoy on Thursday that he welcomed Donald Trump's initiative about a 30-day unconditional truce, but he set a series of conditions for Russian participation. The G7 countries have meanwhile expressed unwavering support for Ukraine and threatened further sanctions against Russia if it doesn't back a ceasefire. There have been concerns of divisions among the foreign ministers who are meeting in Canada, with the US now keen to warm its ties with Moscow. But a closing statement backed what they described as credible security arrangements for Ukraine to guard against any renewed acts of aggression. The U.S. Secretary of State is Marco Rubio.
I think there is reason to be cautiously optimistic, but by the same token, we continue to recognize this is a difficult and complex situation. It will not be easy, it will not be simple, but we certainly feel like we're at least some steps closer to ending this war and bringing peace, but it's still a long journey.
However, the EU Foreign Affairs Chief Kaja Kallas was less optimistic.
The ball is in Russia's court. We see now what Russia is doing. So the reactions were really not unconditional, but conditional. And of course, these conditions that have been presented are not acceptable. It also shows clearly that Russia does not really want peace. Their end goals haven't changed, and we have to keep that in mind.
Pakistan says most of the hostages killed in this week's train hijacking were soldiers and security personnel. The military says of the 26 fatalities, only 5 were civilians. The number of dead may still rise. The authorities have denied that intelligence failures made the attack possible. The separatist Baluch Liberation Army says it carried out the assault. Pakistan has linked it to Afghanistan. BBC News.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Five Nines, a locally owned cloud service provider of enterprise-level IT infrastructure consulting, hosting, and management services. On the web at 59s.com. Phone number 512-1000.
6 foot six above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to places truth has never heard before.
Good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair. I am Sarah Gabler, usually sitting behind the scenes as the producer of this show. Today I am stepping in for your regular host, Esty Denner. From the high costs of insurance and issues of quality of care, the U.S.'s healthcare system leaves a lot to be desired. Here in Wisconsin, the maternal mortality rate is higher for Black women than white women, and about one-third of hospitals in the state are run by Catholic groups who can select which reproductive procedures they'll provide based on the Catholic Church's directives. But instead of coming to the conclusion that we need more and better healthcare, too many folks seem to be eagerly abandoning evidence-based medicine for the lavender haze of soul astrology and cod liver oil. No matter if you're on the political right or left, it's easy to get red-pilled by a world of wellness influencers who want you to know that there's a better way, that you can be healthy and whole, and those vaccines and masking mandates are impediments to your freedom and higher reality. These influencers await your subscriptions to their essential oil and supplement clubs with open arms. And these hucksters, grifters, and cons have a track record of funneling people's real fears about the world into health conspiracies, some even becoming a gateway to the far-right QAnon realm. Today on A Public Affair, we're talking about the place where New Age spirituality and QAnon meet, the world of conspirituality. Conspirituality is a concept, a movement, and the title of a podcast hosted by Derek Beres, Matthew Remsky, and Julian Walker. Julian is joining us today to talk about how their podcast became their co-authored book by the same title, Conspirituality, How New Age Conspiracy Theories Became a Health Threat. Julian Walker grew up in Zimbabwe and South Africa and has lived in LA since 1990. He's written extensively on cults and gurus, spiritual bypass, and quantum woo in the New Age circles, trauma in the body, and neuroscience and somatic psychology informing the practice and teaching of yoga. He teaches yoga and is the ecstatic dance DJ facilitator for his Dance Tribe events. Thank you for joining us today, Julian.
Wonderful to be here.
Well, let's just, before we dive into the book, actually, I want to hear about your own journey, how your background brings you to this topic.
Yeah, I started off my journey in Los Angeles in about 1990, as you said, from my somewhat outdated at this point bio, which is fine. And I started out going to music school And I got very interested in yoga and meditation. I'd also been introduced to these practices by my mother, who was part of that sort of hippie countercultural movement, which in South Africa was also an anti-apartheid movement, I should add. And I just never stopped practicing yoga. Yoga and meditation were extremely helpful to me from early adulthood, even as far back as my teens. And by the time I was about 23, realizing I wasn't going to be a rock star, teaching yoga was a great way to make a living, doing something that I love, sharing something that was meaningful for me. And that was my entry into this whole world of wellness and alternative medicine and various preoccupations with diet, a lot of which I think is beneficial, and it's coming from a very sincere place about wanting to take good care of yourself. A lot of it is also environmentally self-aware. In terms of where we ended up with the book, one of the questions that people would ask us a lot would be like, well, how come people who are in this crunchy granola yoga world seem to be getting red-pilled into a lot of this QAnon conspiracy theory stuff? And one of our answers is that on reflection, because all three of us have similar backgrounds, on reflection, the wellness, new age yoga kind of world had, during this period, I'm talking about the 90s, the early 2000s, been somewhat apolitical. So it was culturally liberal. These are people you'd see at Whole Foods with a yoga mat tucked under their arm at the juice bar before they went to their acupuncture appointment, for example, right? But their grasp and engagement and sense of motivation to be really politically aware may not have been that strong. And so, yeah, I found myself in that whole maelstrom, that subculture, that orientation towards the world.
And how did you find your way out of that kind of apolitical yoga world and into where you are now?
Well, I mean, my story is somewhat unique because I came here as an immigrant. I lived a very humble life for a long time. I lived in one room. I didn't have a car. I was really happy to be able to teach yoga to make some money. I was going into really privileged neighborhoods to do that. And so I had this sort of dual consciousness of like, I come from this very politically intense environment that I left because of the threats of being jailed for my political views and for my refusal to serve in the apartheid military. So I already had that awareness that politics was not abstract, that it really affected real human beings and that it could come for any of us. And at the same time, I was in this very privileged world where I saw a lot of what I would later understand as spiritual bypass. And that spiritual bypass was not just around politics. It was also around psychology and interpersonal relationships. And, you know, you create your own reality and there are no victims and everything is perfect. And, you know, it's all happening for a reason. And often this tends to default into a kind of victim blaming and a real lack of empathy, ironically, for people's suffering. And a kind of what we on the podcast have ended up calling health libertarianism, where it's like, you know, every man for himself, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, make yourself strong and healthy and, you know, stop complaining about the past, just let it all go, which actually dovetails with some interpretations of certain spiritual teachings from various traditions that you can totally free yourself from anything that seems to be limiting your consciousness as a liberated, empowered human being. So there's a lot of interesting contradictions in there. And so as I grew up within that community, I saw a lot of those things. And being intellectually curious, I continued to educate myself on some alternative ways that seemed to do better justice to the human condition than a lot of these fallacies. And so and this is true of Derek and Matthew, my co-hosts as well, for a long time within those communities, we were kind of the skeptics who were saying, yeah, but what about this? And what about this? And have you considered that maybe that's not really super, you know, healthy to see the world in these terms or to think about your life and what happens to you and what happens to other people who are less fortunate than yourself in these very kind of harsh terms.
You know, my background in an evangelical, very conservative evangelical community in Texas,
is not at all like yoga land. Mm-hmm. In fact, my family would have really balked at the idea of a yoga class, of a sure. wellness retreat or something like that. But in reading the book and in listening to the podcast, there are so many kind of themes and behaviors, mentalities that actually surprisingly overlap. For instance,
yes.
When I was a kid, I remember my uncle denying my aunt life-saving cancer treatment because he believed that she should have faith, that she could pray her way to health. And when my mom was in a car accident, he told her she could, if she was truly faithful, she would pray her pain away. Like this level of a metaphysics of belief that transcends the material reality, the physiological processes of the body, is based on a different kind of set of spiritual beliefs, but it resonates so strongly with the way that you write about yoga land or Reiki energy and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I'm really fascinated with is the history of all of these ideas. So in our like bonus episode section, I dig into the roots of conspirituality and all of the long history going back, you know, at least 100, 150 years so far. Let's see where it ends up. But, you know, the overlap there might be Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science and the idea that your health and your well-being, both mentally and physically, are already perfect because you exist sort of in the mind of God. And anything that appears to be wrong, any ailment that you have, is really a failure of faith. It's a failure of right thinking. It's a failure of seeing the world correctly. And so it can be corrected through spiritual practice, through faith, through scripture, through laying on of hands. And Reiki is just another form of laying on of hands, and various forms of New Age, you create your own reality. Kind of The Secret was really the big cultural moment that those ideas had back in 2006, where they broke through into the mainstream, and Oprah was featuring all of those teachers and personalities in that movie. I don't know if you followed that at the time. Oh, okay. There's that worldview has become almost inextricably intertwined with how people think about yoga and meditation, but it actually comes much more from a New Thought Christian Science, sort of from the 1840s, 1850s onwards in America, and gets repurposed and put into hipper, more countercultural clothing in the 90s in the US.
Yeah, I love that little walk through history there. And as our past gets redressed, or, you know, repackaged and distributed online via social media influencers, we get something that looks like the conspirituality movement that you write about.
Yep.
So walk us through what conspirituality is and how we get here.
Well, I'll say that for my colleagues and I, what started this project and what ended up culminating in this book, and then us having a chapter of the book published in Time Magazine the week that it came out, and you're getting a fair amount of press coverage, what started all of that for us was we were noticing first that our social media feeds, right at the start of COVID, were filled with wellness and yoga influencers who had a lot of followers, repeating conspiracy theories about this is caused by 5G, this is all the plan of the deep state cabal, this is a way to try to get the vaccines into you that are going to be microchipped, that it can control your mind. All of that was very quickly taking over, and that the at least in the social media sense, which, you know, we were mostly at home during that time period and experiencing a lot of anxiety. And a lot of people, I think people were spending a lot more time on social media. So this was a big deal that we were seeing in our social feeds, life coaches, yoga teachers, energy healers, alternative medicine practitioners, who in some cases had hundreds of thousands or even millions of followers, were saying, don't believe what you're seeing. And so we started talking about this amongst ourselves. We did a couple episodes trying to understand it. And along the way, we discovered, oh, there's this word, conspirituality. And I like the way you were saying it, because you were saying it as it's a con, right? Like it's a confidence trick. But really, the word is a portmanteau of conspiracy and spirituality, right? conspirituality, but I like conspirituality as well, because they all actually fit. And that concept had been put into the academic literature by two sociologists, I believe, David Voash and Charlotte Ward. And what they did is they took the work of Michael Barkun, who's a political scientist, and he's written books and done academic work on conspiracy theories and on how conspiracy theories have this sort of political influence. And this goes back even to a very famous essay called The Paranoid Style in American Politics, which was written many decades ago and talks about this as well. But what Michael Barkun said was that there are these three kind of statements that are in a way definitional of the conspiracy-oriented mindset. Nothing is as it seems. Everything is connected. And there are no accidents. And if you think of those three statements, nothing is as it seems, everything is connected, there are no accidents, that's a rubric for how you explain the world in ways that can lean into conspiracy explanations that maybe are not well supported by evidence, maybe require leaps in reasoning, maybe have various logical fallacies at play. Usually there's some kind of scapegoating, which is why they fit really well with far right-wing politics. There can be scapegoating. There can be a sense that the elites are part of a cabal that's behind the scenes pulling the strings, that all of that works together in terms of a conspiratorial worldview that has political implications. What Ward and Voas did is they said, wow, when we heard these three statements, we thought about New Age spirituality. Everything happens for a reason. It's all connected. You are one. Nothing is really as it seems. There's a hidden spiritual reality, and you could probably equally apply it in some ways to certain forms of evangelicalism and other types of passionate religious worldviews that really impose a kind of metaphysical meaning onto all of the events of the world. It's all the battle between good and evil. It's all about, you know, how you navigate a kind of a set of spiritual principles that have grand cosmic implications. So Ward and Voas published their paper, I believe, in 2011. And so we really drew on that in our initial episodes in terms of saying, hey, here's a framework that already exists. And we really just took it from there. And we thought, well, maybe we'll do a few episodes about this and this thing will start to fade, you know, because we're only going to be under quarantine measures for a month or two. And then COVID will kind of die away. And then these conspiracy theories will calm down. People will go back to work. And there won't be as much energy around all of this. And sadly to say, we were wrong, which meant that we're now, you know, 250 main feed episodes, probably another 100 Saturday brief episodes, a bunch of bonus material, and a book has come out of all of this, which in a way is great for us, but it's also a really sad outcome in terms of what we were seeing and hoping for in the beginning.
You're listening to A Public Affair on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm your host, Sarah Gabler, speaking with Julian Walker about conspirituality or conspirituality, if you're me mispronouncing it. Julian, I love the example of Charlotte Ward, because not only is she this figure that gave you this very powerful definition and, you know, is connected to the history of the academic study of conspiracy theories, but she also conned you guys a little bit.
Well, that was really fascinating. You know, at some point in the first couple of years, we reached out to them, and we were only able to get in contact with David Voas, who is her colleague and co-author on the paper. And then we ended up getting invited to speak at a conference in Australia, where that was the conspirituality conference. And he was sort of one of the main figures. And we got to present online at that conference. And so through that process, we got to know him a little bit. And he said, oh, I don't know if Charlotte is going to want to talk to you. And, you know, he was very diplomatic, but it sent us off on a track of digging into, like, what has happened with Charlotte Ward. And part of it is that he said that she was actually, when they were writing the paper, there was an aspect of how she was thinking about conspirituality, which was pro-conspirituality, that actually this was a meaningful epistemology for discovering truths about the world, because there really are hidden you know, dark forces at play. And yeah, there are. And the way that you can, our counter would be the way that you can discover and expose and you know, correct the imbalances and the injustices they're creating is through investigative journalism and scientific inquiry and really backing up your accusations with evidence and making sure that your reasoning all holds up and you're not, you know, falsely accusing people or presuming that things are going on just based on vibes. So she, I think, went more down that vibes road. And it's an interesting, she's an interesting example because I don't think anyone really knows why some people are more susceptible to getting really caught up in this way of thinking than other people. But we do know that getting engaged in conspiracy theories, just like getting drawn into a cult or becoming really passionate about fundamentalist religion, or, you know, finding a guru who you become convinced is divine and has the ultimate truth of the universe, that if you just listen to them, you know, you're ultimately going to find freedom and happiness. All of this does create relief from anxiety. It does create a sense of meaning and purpose. It does create a sense of belonging to a group of people. And Michael Barkun, to go back to him, has this concept of stigmatized knowledge. This is knowledge that the mainstream institutions have rejected, and that you and your inner circle of very smart people who've had the awakening, who've taken the red pill, they know the things that everyone else is denying. And this concept, not necessarily the concept of stigmatized knowledge, but the way that it plays out in the world, has become somewhat center stage to our politics at this point, I'm very sad to say. With Charlotte Ward, she went down a road that was very similar to QAnon, which didn't exist at the time they wrote the paper and which was very much part of what we were looking at from the start, because we were seeing, oh, these yoga and wellness folks are starting not only to repeat QAnon-style ideas about what's happening in the world and accusations about the cabal of Hollywood and Democrat elites who are involved in blood-drinking pedophilia, but that they were also remixing it with a sort of new age angle, that this was all about the awakening to fifth dimensional consciousness that was going to happen, you know, right around the time of, right after the 2020 election, because Trump is a light worker, you see, and he's here to save us from the dark cabal, all of that kind of remixing. So Charlotte Ward got involved in something called now referred to as the Hampstead hoax, which was a very QAnon related kind of similar story about a sort of moral panic that happened in England. And she was very convinced of this and involved in writing a lot under a pseudonym about, you know, these terrible abuses that were supposedly happening at a mass scale within a community. And it turned out just not really to be true.
Yeah. This is A Public Affair. If you have a comment or question, want to share a story, you can give us a call at 608-256-2001. One thing that I picked up from the book, Julian, is, you know, on this topic of how folks get involved in conspiracy theories or cults, et cetera, it could happen to anybody. It's not yes. that everybody is so rational and, you know, yes. I'm so rational, I can overcome, I can see through things. You know, for folks who are taken up by, like, Charlotte Ward, you know, an intelligent person, like she goes down that road. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks who are formerly religious, like I am, exiting one form of repressive, toxic religious structure, finding our way into another form of spirituality can be very comforting. And I have an example to share that I think... is really interesting. My coworker Faye, who was reporting on a visit by Charlie Kirk, the founder of Turning Point USA. He came to UW-Madison last fall. This is a pretty liberal town, pretty liberal campus, and this very conservative college speaker comes. And Faye was talking to some students who were at that that event, students who didn't care for his politics, his conservative politics, but when pressed about why they were there, they expressed that actually they found some of his points persuasive, and these points were around GMOs, wellness culture, and supplements. So there's something about the body, there's something about health that becomes like a very like useful for the con artist, very potent opening for folks. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, well, that sounds like Charlie Kirk has availed himself of RFK Jr. and the Maha movement, and a lot of it makes sense to him, as it makes sense to huge swathes of the population. So, you know, we have to always contextualize this, that we live in a society where we do not have a social safety net. People have immense anxiety about their health, about their access to health care, about how, you know, really, really high percentage of the population is just one medical emergency away from bankruptcy. And when you combine that then with a sort of populist mood, political mood that is on the rise everywhere in the world right now, who knows why? I mean, we could spend a lot of time digging into the layers and looking at what the political scientists are saying about this. Populism essentially argues that you already know the truth. You as an ordinary person, especially as a common man, you know what the truth is. You can trust your gut. You can shoot from the hip, and you don't need any elite experts telling you what's going on. You don't need any fancy education or book learning. You're one of the salt of the earth people who just, you know, your intuitions are generally really good. And the elites want to try and talk you out of that and confuse you. And that kind of manipulation of people's desire to feel a sense of dignity in the face of a society that, you know, can provoke a lot of anxiety and a lot of humiliation and a lot of disempowerment, I think is very, very persuasive. And the body becomes an incredible site for that, because if your experience is that you go to the doctor and they have 12 minutes to talk to you, and they don't have time to listen to you, and they don't care about the thing that you read online, and they don't care that you've been listening to some podcast with a bro science influencer who's telling you that if you just eat a lot of butter and walk on the grass barefoot first thing in the morning and spend some time gazing at the sun and then plunge into a cold plunge and then take the supplement that I'm going to sell to you that has no evidence to support it, that's going to cost you $120 a month, you will be protected from cancer. You will have incredible longevity and mental focus and be amazing in the bedroom. The fact that your doctor doesn't want to listen to that, you know, or the fact that, you know, and we know this especially for minorities and for women, that you may very often feel dismissed by your doctor in terms of what your aches and pains are, in terms of what concerns that you have that maybe run in your family that you just know about from, like, you know, my aunt had this and my sister has this, and is there any way that I may have this? If the general experience is impersonal and there's a sense of a big gap between the expertise of the doctor and the experience of the patient, that into that gap can come a lot of pseudoscience that actually feels reassuring, that actually feels empowering, that is meeting some of the needs, even though it's in a false and manipulative, exploitive way, that are falling by the wayside within a system like that. And then you add to that all of the issues with health insurance. You add to that the fact that a lot of people just can't afford to take good care of themselves. There's a vulnerability there, and people want to believe in general. I think a lot of people want to believe that if they take responsibility for how they eat, how they exercise, if they find the experts that they can listen to who are sort of outsiders, who have the stigmatized knowledge, who say, well, mainstream medicine doesn't want you to know this, but if you take this supplement or you do this weird thing with your smoothie every morning, that's going to be, that's the thing they don't want you to know, because they want to keep you sick. We're going to make you really healthy. So I think someone like Charlie Kirk is going to tap into that. He's going to tap into people who are, you know, totally sincere and maybe very smart, but haven't really looked into this, will listen to him and go, yeah, you know what? I agree with that. And there is an epidemic of chronic illness in this country, like RFK Jr. said. And there's much more autism than there used to be. What the hell's going on with that? Maybe it does have to do with the seed oils, right? And it's like the fact that there's no evidence for any of this, yeah, and the fact that you can explain these statistical realities if you take the time to really look at them carefully. Like there's more Alzheimer's because the baby boomers have slanted our demographics towards there being way more people over 65, and your risk for Alzheimer's, I think, doubles every 5 years after 65. Like, yes, there's more Alzheimer's. Yes, we're better at diagnosing Alzheimer's. We're better at diagnosing autism now. You don't have to go looking then three steps removed for an explanation for a problem that you've largely fabricated by misreading the data.
It seems like the easy answer is, oh, if you just do this. Mm-hmm. Oh, if you just do that, like the smoothie fix or the raw milk cleanse.
Yeah. Yeah.
These things would be very satisfying if it were just that simple.
And the raw milk is a really great example, right? Because what is the claim? Raw milk has all of these incredible health benefits that you're being robbed of by this newfangled, even though it's been around for like, I don't know, a couple hundred years, this newfangled process that makes it supposedly healthy, but it's actually killing all of the natural goodness. And your risk of getting any of these things that they try and scare you about is incredibly, incredibly small. Well, the risk may be small, but the outcome could be absolutely terrible, as we've seen with these outbreaks of awful illness as a result of people thinking that raw milk is a good health choice.
I have to plug your podcast episode on raw milk called Raw Dogging Wellness. It's on the Conspirituality podcast. Love it. Folks, you're listening to A Public Affair and this really rich, lovely conversation that I'm having with Julian Walker about conspirituality. If you want to give us a call at 608-256-2001. Julian, I would love it if you read a quick passage from the book. For folks out there, there are three co-authors on this book, and it has such a wonderful voice and attitude and style that I want you to hear a little bit about. So, Julian, that's starting on page 7 and going to page 8.
Okay, mm-hmm. I have it here. In hindsight, this very real social precarity and sense of institutional betrayal helped to foster an urgent desire for novel answers and individual empowerment. An increasingly anti-social media began to crackle with vaguely connected phrases and memes that were both paranoid and strangely overly confident. People were posting about COVID as if they had better intel than public health officials, a better grasp on the big picture. They had a secret knowledge they were compelled to share, even if the details were sketchy. According to them, something far more terrible than a pandemic was unfolding. In reality, the posters argued, the pandemic was a ruse through which governments, big pharma, and amoral tech companies could execute ancient plans for world domination. The sacred circle of family and nature from which health and fulfillment flows was under attack. At a certain point, it might have clicked that some of these posts weren't coming from the usual cage-fighting political pro wrestlers. The paranoia had a goopy glow. The pandemic had inflamed an obsession with health, not the public type of health, now caricatured by tedious messages about social distancing and masks, but an impassioned, moralizing fetish for personal health that is preoccupied with low body fat, supplements, positive thinking, sugar elimination, and focus on the soul.
Thank you, Julian. I think that encapsulates much of our conversation in the world that you have been studying for so long. I want to go to the phone lines. We have Gil on the line with a question. Thank you for calling, Gil.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I mean, earlier you were talking about some people who would be more susceptible to getting into conspiracy theories may come from conservative Christian evangelistic or sort of spiritual practices that are more sort of apocalyptic in their nature. I was just wondering if Buddhists get into this, and particularly Zen Buddhists, whether that's something that, whether you would find them being more easily or not, or less easily drawn into conspiracy theories.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Gil. Julian, you have a little bit of experience with this.
Yeah, you know, I think that when we talk about Buddhism, even more than when we talk about yoga, the westernized kind of version that has been commodified or has become popular in certain circles. Meditation is certainly not as popular a practice as yoga because it actually requires a lot more patience and discipline and being willing to sit by yourself and not be stimulated by all the things that you can otherwise get involved with in a practice like yoga. I think that there are several different flavors and moods that we find within the Buddhist subculture in the West. And some of those tend to be world denying. And I think that might be what Gil is getting at, that a kind of, you know, some forms of Zen actually are very much about shutting yourself off from the world. And there's a monastic quality about it. There's also a kind of stoic quality about it. So it wouldn't be hard for me to imagine, just thinking about the belief system, that there could be overlap there in terms of some forms of conspiracism, some rejection maybe of science, some rejection of feeling like one has to participate in the global community sort of public health efforts to keep us all healthy. There may even be, I think for some people will run with certain Buddhist ideas into this place of saying, you know, all of material reality is an illusion anyway. And so why would I bother trying to save it when it's all, you know, much, much less important than some kind of realization of an absolute spiritual truth? So all of that said, we haven't particularly found that there's a strong incidence, a strong trend of conspirituality as a phenomenon kind of flowing through Buddhist communities per se. There are some breakaway Buddhist groups that have gotten fairly cultish. There's a teacher named Michael Roach, who actually Matthew Remsky studied with, my co-host for some time, who definitely went down that road. He went down a very New Age road around manifestation and you create your own reality, partially as a way of marketing his Buddhist teachings. And he's originally a Tibetan Buddhist monk, but he's been, you know, cast out by that mainstream because of his beliefs. And he did get into conspiracism and a lot of these ideas around how you don't really need the icky interventions of medical science.
Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I want to move us into talking about soft eugenics and where we are with MAHA, the Make America Healthy Again plan. You know, the book on spirituality is from 2023. And as we were talking before the show started, it's so very present and yet so very far away. Like the things that were on the table, I mean, y'all were writing about RFK Jr. and these figures, but now they have real political power. And I want to talk about how the body fascism of yoga world and the political fascism of the far right kind of come together in the soft eugenics that we're seeing from MAHA and other things right now.
Yeah. What we observed as we were writing the book. So we started the podcast in 2020. We wrote the book in 2022. Really, the writing of the book was taking roughly the 100 episodes or so we had researched and recorded at that point and saying, well, what does this really tell us? And as part of that, we ended up with three sections in the book. So one section is really talking about what was happening currently. And we had a gallery of rogues. So all of the people that were the main offenders, the big, big influencers who were driving the phenomenon as we understood it. One section was about our personal background and how it sort of positioned us in relation to the content. And then one section was really about the history. And part of the history is that you can go back and find within the eugenics movement this preoccupation with physical health, with being a specimen. So there's a lot of strongman iconography here. There's a lot of bodybuilding. And this actually has overlaps with yoga. With yoga as the kind of yoga that ends up becoming popular in the West actually goes back to the 1930s in Mysore, India. And it is specifically created and marketed and put out there in terms of photographic media as being about incredible physical prowess. And some of this actually is an understandable reaction against colonialism, against British colonialism, and against the stereotype of the Indian man as being effete and not being a specimen of physical strength that is easily dominated by the colonizer. And so there was this attitude that, like, we are going to build ourselves back up and reclaim a kind of national pride, a completely understandable reaction. But that then intersects with the eugenics ideas that are coming out of the United States, which actually end up influencing the Nazis. Nazis modeled a lot of their ideas on ideas that came from America originally during this period. And they also were drawing a lot of metaphysical and spiritual influence from the yoga tradition, as well as from disciplines like astrology and homeopathy, things that had more to do with the occult. Nazis were actually very fascinated with all of that. So as we dug into the history, we're going, wow, there are a lot of connections here that might seem kind of far-fetched to someone if they're not actually digging into some of the reading that we're looking at. And so we found that this preoccupation with the kind of health libertarianism, with the notion that only the strong will survive, with this idea that you can kind of, the eugenics version of it is that you're going to breed, in a way, a superior race. And you're going to do that by eliminating all of the people who not only are disabled or are sickly, or who are weak in some way physically, but also people who are deemed to be morally deficient, who are deemed to be psychologically just too much of a drag on this, you know, superior race as it is developing. And we can see elements of this running through a lot of different aspects of American culture and certain aspects of conspirituality and certainly aspects of Maha. So Make America Healthy Again is the sort of rebrand of RFK Jr. and a lot of people in his circle once he aligned himself with Trump, realizing that, you know, he wasn't going to himself have a shot at the presidency, which was always a long shot, but that he also wasn't going to be able to align himself with the Democrats. And anyway, the Democrats didn't end up being in power. So here you have RFK Jr. saying, I'm going to find my way into this administration through Make America Healthy Again, which obviously dovetails with Make America Great Again. And the whole sort of ethos of this particular group of people, who it's not only RFK Jr., it's also to some extent Jay Bhattacharya, who's going to be involved in a very high cabinet position as well. It's Marty Makary. These people are working together within the government from this outsider perspective about health, and also from a very contrarian orientation toward what happened during COVID. And so they have a whole story about how the vaccines were actually much more dangerous than the mainstream science says, that they were much less effective than we've been told. They have this whole idea that we should not have quarantined, that we should have just let the virus run rampant through the population, similar to what the Swedes did for the first, I think, month or two. They often refer back to the Swedish policy, which they absolutely stopped doing after a couple months because they realized it was killing so many people, especially elderly. And then they adopted even more restrictive quarantine measures, which were followed even more closely by their population, which tends not to be, you know, wild frontier kind of libertarians. They're like, oh yes, for the good of everyone, we should do this together because we're Swedish. So these folks who now have come to power have those kinds of very inhumane attitudes about how we should manage public health. And on top of that, they have all of the conspiratorial pseudoscience attitudes, which Bobby Kennedy, you know, if you saw his confirmation hearings, his opening statement has all of it. It's the pesticides, it's the food coloring, it's the vaccines. These are what is causing this terrible health crisis. And I'm going to come in and make America healthy again by somehow, you know, changing all of that by bringing a revolution. And this is the spirit of our somewhat crazy populist time politically, as we see with Doge and as we see with Project 2025. It all fits together actually really nicely in ways that we were hoping the podcast would help
maybe play some small role in preventing by letting people know, hey, this stuff is all really dangerous, but here we are, and it's front and center on the world stage.
You're listening to A Public Affair on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. I'm your guest host today, Sarah Gabler, here with Julian Walker of the Conspirituality Podcast. We're having a fantastic conversation about, oh, all of it. Conspiracy theories, our current political moment. And we just got this excellent description of how yoga world and American politics, the history of the eugenics movement all come together. And, you know, come together so that we see in response to the measles outbreak in West Texas, we hear people saying, oh, well, healthy kids won't get sick, so it's not that big of a problem. And there's an episode of your podcast from last week that talked about the soft eugenics of that kind of statement. Can you talk a little bit about what effect that is having on people?
Yeah, well, the soft eugenics kind of idea, it extends to what we were talking about a moment ago in terms of a kind of survival of the fittest idea, right? But it also extends all the way through Project 2025 being enacted now at the level of government agencies and at the level of official documentation where, you know, we're not going to talk about trans people. We're not going to talk about women. We're not going to talk about anything that is related to this bugaboo of DEI. So any reference to minority groups and their needs or to people's identities or to trying to find a way to create more fair and just structures within our government and within our country, all of that is pushed to the side. And that's part of that sort of eugenics mood and attitude and approach to things as well. With regard to the measles, you know, one of the things that happened is RFK Jr., when the terrible outbreak was coming to a head in West Texas, is he published an official statement on the government website saying that MMR vaccines are really important. But anytime he's been interviewed about it, that's not really something he talks about. What he talks about is, well, we're having great success treating these measles cases with cod liver oil and with steroids and with, you know, this particular antibiotic, and we're, you know, the kids are doing really, really well. He doesn't say all of this could have been prevented, as it has been prevented for decades now, where we have not had a child die from measles until the last few weeks, by just good vaccination policy and the public understanding that if they take these vaccines, they're, you know, their kids are going to be safe. And the MMR vaccine, which is the one that protects kids against measles, which is a potentially really, really dangerous illness, is at the heart of the vaccines cause autism panic, which has been completely disproved. It's been looked at very, very carefully. There are multiple studies that show the two have nothing to do with one another whatsoever. But Andrew Wakefield is the person who was at the center of that whole debacle. And he has since been shown to have actually been a fraud and a con man, and that actually he propagated those lies because he himself was creating a measles vaccine that he was going to hope to put up as the alternative to the MMR vaccine, and that it was all lies. And all of the people who co-authored that study have since come forward and said, actually, we regret ever being involved with him. We see really clearly what happened now. The data was not accurate. RFK Jr. has referred to Wakefield as one of the sort of great heroes. I'm not quoting him exactly here, to paraphrase, one of the great, you know, heroes and truth tellers, you know, in the history of medical science. So he tends to talk out of both sides of his mouth. And how is that affecting people? Well, just look, where are we at now? Is it 300 kids who have measles across multiple states? It may be more than that at this point. I haven't checked the news yet today.
Yeah. There was a moment in that recent podcast about MAHA and the measles in which y'all talk about the risk assessment that folks who follow these health conspiracies are willing to do when it comes to things like supplements or raw milk. Like, yeah, maybe there are some side effects, but overall the benefit is good. But this risk assessment is not applied when it comes to public health, when it comes to vaccines, that maybe there are some side effects from a vaccine or from a medical intervention, but the public health good of this thing outweighs those risks. And I want to hear you talk a little bit about the role of individualism or collectivism or communitarianism and how those two are really in conflict at this moment.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because there's two layers there that are intersecting with each other or bouncing off of each other in some kind of way. One layer, I think, has to do with trust. Trust versus mistrust, right? And so there, the conspiratorial mindset and the populist political mindset, I would say, has a generalized distrust against public health authorities, against elites who have some kind of special qualifications. Again, in terms of what you were saying, the other layer, there is a mistrust of anything that is asking us to sacrifice for the good of the community, to be part of a kind of collectivist movement, to understand that, well, I may not like this, or this may not be what I prefer, or I may have to, this may cause me some discomfort, but ultimately it's going to be good for all of us in a way that I too will benefit from. But I also care about other people. And I also care about the most vulnerable among us. So what public health policy that is based in, you know, when we have a pandemic, we're going to have quarantine measures. They're going to be imperfect. We're making it up as we go along. We are scientists. We're dealing with a new virus. We suggest that you do this thing. And then, you know, like 2 weeks later, it turns out that thing wasn't really, maybe the evidence didn't bear it out. Now we suggest you do this thing. We're developing these vaccines as fast as we can. Isn't it amazing that we have the technology to do this? Now we suggest that you take these vaccines. Here's the data. Here are the phase 3 trials that we've done with tens of thousands of people. Here's the efficacy. Here are some of the side effects you may experience. They're incredibly, incredibly rare. And they're transitory. We're going to give you full disclosure. Now, that's all very different from the influencer who says, I'm here to help you take responsibility for your health. And I'm going to recommend this supplement to you because there's one study that suggests that it may do this thing that you really, really want, or it may protect you in this kind of way. You know, RFK Jr. is doing this with vitamin A. There's a study that shows that vitamin A is really, really helpful for incredibly malnourished children in protecting them against measles. That does not cross over into people in the United States, you know, who are not dealing with those same kinds of challenges around malnutrition. If they just took very high doses of vitamin A, they wouldn't need to be vaccinated. The health influencer is going to tell you, you don't need a vaccine. Joe Rogan said this on his podcast. If you're a 21-year-old kid who works out regularly, I wouldn't get the vaccine. Why? Because I've heard that young men are at a higher risk of getting myocarditis from the vaccine. Well, young men are actually at a very, very high risk of getting myocarditis from COVID, and the outcomes are usually much, much worse. And if you're not vaccinated, you're more likely to get those terrible outcomes. So the trust in the figure who's saying, you're an individual, you can take responsibility for yourself, and you're trusting me because of my charismatic personality, mm-hmm. more so mm-hmm. than the fact that I have a PhD and that I've been working in this field for, you know, decades. That mismatch around trust versus mistrust and around individualism versus some sort of collectivist empathy, it's at the heart of the problem I think we're dealing with.
Yeah. And we are also winding down the hour as we approach 1 o'clock. Julian, there's much more that I had hoped that we'd cover, but I'm so glad that we've delved into these questions with such depth. If you are listening out there and want to know more, you can follow the Conspirituality podcast. You can pick up the book, Conspirituality, How New Age Health Conspiracies Became a Threat, and learn more about how to follow the money, the grifters in the book are just such fascinating figures, how they are running MLMs and other supplement industries, and their promotion of cod liver oil, for example, is because they own a cod liver oil company. You know, that's follow the money. You can read about all the fascinating, charismatic conspiracy theorists. You can learn about what motivates them, like spiritual bypassing, a topic that I'm fascinated by, and I'll keep reading more as you write on that, Julian. Is there any last word that you have for our listeners?
Any last word? Skepticism is a really crucial aspect of how we relate to the world, but it's different than pseudo-skepticism in that being skeptical means really considering the evidence and trying to get evidence from people who really know what they're talking about. And if you're doing your due diligence on that, I take my hat off to you. But if you're thinking that skepticism is about following your gut and listening to charismatic influencers who may not have your best interests at heart and looking at the big money behind big pharma, but not also looking at mm-hmm. big supplement and big MLM and mm-hmm. you know how all of the people around RFK Jr. are super opportunistic grifters, then you may have been fooled.
Well, thank you, Julian Walker. And thank you to the podcast that you work for, really bringing a lot of science literacy into the world. Thank you for joining me today.
A pleasure.
You've been listening to A Public Affair on Community Radio WORT 89.9 FM. I'm Sarah Gabler. I've been your host for today. I've been talking with Julian Walker about conspirituality. Julian and his co-hosts Derek Beres, Matthew Rimsky, and Mallory DeMille also have a podcast that you should check out with titles as fabulous as Raw Dogging Wellness and the Blessed Neo Kayfabe of Santa Claus. So go subscribe and then subscribe to A Public Affair as well. I want to thank our sound engineer, Summer, our receptionist, Lainey, news director, Shelley Pittman. Up next is Mel and Floyd. Keep it tuned here to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it.
Ha ha. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way to jump right in there.
You know, after the last 2 weeks, I feel like I'm just going to sit here and do the crossword puzzle and smoke a cigarette.
Yeah.
No, I want to thank, we both do, want to thank all the listeners.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, all right. I'll just speak for myself. People just really coughed up the dough. That was really nice. So thank you so much for the last 2 weeks.
Well, not just for this little show, but for the whole station.
Yeah.
We made our goal and all kinds of great stuff.
Yeah. What's up?